Hello and welcome to the Physician Financial Success Podcast. My name is Josh Schmettel and this is the podcast dedicated to advising physicians how to avoid financial landmines. Today we'll be talking with Dave Denniston, physician-focused financial advisor and author from Bloomington, Minnesota. Dave's self-described passion is to help his clients eliminate debt and reduce their tremendous tax burden. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. Dave, welcome to the show. We are excited to have you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Josh. This will be fun.
It will be fun. I was telling you before we started the podcast here that as I was reading your workbook, I was getting excited for this. So let's jump right in if we can.
Let's do it.
The first question I have for you is when I was reading a little bit about your story, you told the story of your daughter. Am I saying her name correctly? Is it Evangeline?
Evangeline. Close enough.
Evangeline. Okay. All right. Thank you for your forgiveness there. Evangeline's birth and how that kind of traumatic experience eventually led you to be passionate about serving physicians. Would you just recap that for us? I love that story.
Yeah, you bet. Well, about 2.5 years ago, my wife and I had our second daughter, and it was just such an incredible trying time for us and our family. My wife with our first daughter had toxemia, preeclampsia, and the docs thought, oh, it's probably not going to come back again. And it came back again with the second pregnancy 7 years later with just a vengeance. My wife was having by about 20 weeks gestationally, halfway through the dang thing, she was having horrible headaches. And her blood pressure was way up, and so she got hospitalized. They were telling us she might have to be in the hospital for the whole remainder of the pregnancy, and things just got progressively worse. We were told time and time again, oh, it can't be toxemia, it can't be toxemia. And lo and behold, finally at 23 weeks gestationally, it showed up officially in the exams. And so here we were in the hospital, and My oldest daughter, who was 6 at the time, I had to explain the situation to her that they're going to have to take out her baby sister and she may not make it. And having that conversation was so hard. But the residents and the fellows and the neonatologists were just awesome in walking through the process. One thing that stuck out to me as they told us we were going to have to take her out, and tears just kind of rolling down my face as I asked, well, being the analytical guy that I am, how much of a chance does she have? And they said, well, less than 40%, but in her case, it's either all or nothing. So luckily, she came out 23 weeks gestationally. She was born less than a pound, 12 ounces and change. And it was just a life-changing event. I was there in the operating room the whole time, and we were in the NICU for 5 months afterwards till her adjusted birth date of September. And so as I was in there in the hospital for 5 months, I got to know a lot of the residents and fellows and docs and thought about who my current clients are. And I said, you know what? I could really help these people. And I want to be able to give back. So that's part of the reason I'm here today is just to help give back and give great information and the stuff that I love and know and I'm passionate about. And that's stocks, bonds, mutual funds, taxes, insurance, and all that stuff.
Man, I'm telling you, that is a powerful story. And I mean, the story of her being born at 12 ounces, my wife, you know, we have 2 young children, almost 5 and just turned 3 daughter. And she had, you know, natural births in both of those children. And so, you know, you see a woman for 12, 13 hours go through natural birth, and it's a trying, emotional, tear shed kind of a experience. But pales in comparison to that story of yours. That is such a powerful story, and I love the way you got into this business. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And it's if you can imagine, you go home without your child. That was the hardest thing for my wife.
I can't imagine. I cannot take myself there as a parent, man. But I'm grateful that you and your family are safe. That is super cool.
Yeah, she's doing great now. So that's the awesome news. Here we are 2 years later. She's healthy, defying all the odds. She's catching up on everything. So it's awesome.
She's a miracle baby.
Yes, sir.
All right, buddy. Well, today we are going to review one of your workbooks. You've offered a couple of workbooks, and this one's titled Seven Secrets to Reducing Taxes for Doctors. But before we jump into the seven secrets, can you give us just a brief overview of the first chapter titled How the Tax System Works? Because I think most people in America could not explain that with any sort of accuracy. And talk a little bit about the general trajectory of tax rates over the last few years, and put on your Nostradamus hat and tell us where they're going in the future.
Well, that is a great, great question, Josh. And first, I just want to say we only have so much time. So I could spend probably 3 hours on a seminar on this topic. So we're just going to try and condense it, do a 30-minute overview on all this stuff. So if people want more information for your listeners, I'm more than happy to give them this whole book for free at doctorsachieveretirement.com. So make sure to check that out, doctorsachieveretirement.com. So let's talk about taxes. There's basically three different kinds, all right, that most physicians need to be worried about: income taxes, payroll taxes, things like Social Security, Medicare, and then capital gains taxes. So those are the three main kinds we're going to be talking about a lot today. Now, income taxes are the kind people can control the most. Obviously, we all get paid, but there's ways that we can be proactive with those. So we'll chat about that for a couple minutes. The second one is payroll taxes, Social Security taxes. So this is the stuff that helps subsidize all the various programs like Social Security and Medicare, and those are the hardest to adjust. Although if you're a business owner, there's some cool stuff you can do there. And then lastly, capital gains taxes. And those are actually completely under the control of the individual unless they are in mutual funds. So we'll talk about that a little bit too. Do you want me to start with income taxes a little bit, Josh? Or?
Yeah, I love it. There's so much here, but let's start with income.
All right. So income taxes, the first thing that I think people get messed up on when they look at the tax tables and you look at the rates is that you start getting taxed out of the gate. Well, that's not true. At a minimum, if you're single, the first $9,000 of your income is actually income tax free. If you're married, it's $18,000. So if you're a resident or fellow on the federal level, you're barely getting taxed at all, because then you're getting taxed at the next bracket. 10% after that. So just think, as a resident or a fellow, you are in a low tax bracket when you're there. When you are in practice, now this is when you're getting hit. And there's all kinds of provisions people need to be aware of. Now, income taxes, we'll talk a little bit about later. I think, Josh, you wanted to talk about my five-step system.
Yes.
That docs can do once they're in practice. So we'll talk about that. Payroll taxes. These are getting more expensive with the Affordable Care Act. So there's two particular ways that your income tax as a doc, once you're in practice, that you have to watch out for, that I want to make sure all of your listeners are aware of. Number one, it pushed up the top income tax bracket from 39% up to almost 40, 39.6. So just on federal income taxes, not even including state, many physicians are pushing 40% on income at a given level. Below that, no. So you want to make sure you are looking at these strategies, because when you add in 5% for state, you're pushing 45%. Mm-hmm. Second thing that physicians need to be aware of that the Affordable Care Act did was they added a 3.8% tax on the lesser of net investment income or excess modified adjusted gross income if you're over 250K if you're married, or 200K if you're single. So investment income is something we have to be really cautious of, particularly when you have a two-doc household. A single-doc household may or may not. If you're a surgeon, ophthalmologist, someone like that, you may be more subject to it. Also consider that the capital gains rates also increase because of this same thing. So you got to be careful of this stuff. Payroll taxes also came into effect there too, where the Affordable Care Act, if you're making over $250K, there's an additional Medicare tax of 0.9% if you're married or you're making over $200K if you are single. So before you're paying 15.3 in payroll taxes, now you're paying 16.2.
Wow. So that leads us to the next question, which is, tell us where we've come, and you've talked a little bit about things going up, but what do you see the trajectory of taxes headed over the next few years? Kind of a loaded question, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Basically, if you look at the history, for the last 30 years, two things have come down: interest rates and taxes. And we're at the bottom of the cycle for both these things, which I know you can relate to.
Absolutely.
On interest rates.
Absolutely.
And people need to be looking into thinking about making sure that their mortgages have a low interest rate, and that they lock in and buy those homes if they have the ability. And then number two, in relation to taxes, you can see this just happening over the last few years, and this is likely to continue to increase with the various issues we have. Number one, hey, we're getting close to election season. I want to encourage everyone, get out there and vote. If you're a doc, you are under attack. They're trying to change your Medicare reimbursements. They're going to be trying to change your income. So make sure you get out there and vote and make your voice heard. We need to solve those huge government entitlement issues of Social Security and Medicare, whether it's pushing up ages or increasing taxes or having a cap on what millionaires can get from it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those, whatever you stand for, whatever you believe in, you need to make your voice heard out there, because as a doc, you will see your taxes go up if you keep silent.
Yeah. Hey, one side note, before we get into the five ways to reduce our income and therefore our income taxes, just real quick, out of curiosity, there's a cap at which you can no longer write off the interest on your primary or secondary residence. Do you know that number right off the top of your head?
I have to apologize. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I don't either. So you and I will figure that out after the show. And then when we do the transcription of this, we'll add it in. Nobody will ever know that we didn't know. Except for the listeners, but if they're reading the transcription, we'll add it in there. All right, let's move on then. So let's move into the five ways to reduce our income, which is one of the chapters in your workbook. I'll turn it over and let's start with number one.
Yeah, so this strategy is something that many people are aware of, but they miss a couple points. So number one, this is basic, right? You want to contribute to your employer-sponsored retirement plan, 401k, 403b, whatever that is. And I have a simple mantra: pay yourself first. So everyone, if you're listening, I want you to say this to yourself: pay yourself first. And so this money comes right out of your paycheck. It's withheld by employer. It doesn't even see your tax return. And this is because the income reported on your tax return is adjusted by these kinds of deductions. And at a minimum, I don't care if you're a resident or a fellow or someone else, more than likely you can get free money just by participating. So at a minimum, if you have a match in your 401k, 403b, you have to at least do that. Right. So let's say you put in $3,000. Your employer may match $1,500 or $3,000. You just got a 50% or 100% return just for participating. So you got to do that. Got to do that. And then beyond that, consider that beyond that free return you just got, you get a tax deduction. So here we were just talking about taxes. Perhaps as a resident or a fellow, that's not as important. But once you hit being a doc in practice, you know, here where we're looking at 40-45% tax rates that a lot of docs are going to be paying. So you're saving 45-50% of your money just by putting it in. And the maximum for most physicians that are under 50 years old is $17,500. If you are over 50, that's $23,000. So think about that for a second. If you're over 50 years old, you sock away $23,000. That is at least $8,600 that you are saving yourself in taxes today. So that's huge. Now that's step one, all right? So you want to max out if you can, or at least contribute to your 401k or 403b.
Dave,
now,
can I do a real quick timeout? I want to just mention one more thing because you hit it, but I want to just make sure we put a spotlight on it. I believe that starting the investment process early in one's professional career, regardless of how small the amount is incredibly important to long-term investment success. And the reason I believe that is, and you hit on a couple of good points, the money that they're putting in early has very little, you know, they're not going to save as much in taxes as a resident as they would when they're attending. But if you didn't invest and save and you started it in your attending career, then you'd be comparing to a time when you're at a 40 or 50% tax rate. So it is important to get started early because you have such a low tax overhead at that point. Number one. Number two, the length of time for compounding makes up for the smaller amount that's invested. So yes, it could be pitifully low in those first couple of years. Doesn't matter. The miracle of compound interest will make that investment compound and be worth something significant 30 years down the road. Number three, you establish a habit. And this is one of the most important psychological things in my mind when it comes to investing. You can either measure your self-worth and you can measure how important you are psychologically by the messed things that you own, my cool car, my big house, and my really awesome backyard and swimming pool, or, right? I mean, that are all things that make me feel good, okay? That's just, you got to understand that. That's psychology. That's how we compete as adults. So the other piece, but you can also get that same psychological return, that same charge, that same high by looking at what you have grown in terms of assets. And you can get to a point where you say, okay, I now get a charge from what I've been able to grow inside my retirement plan and inside my asset base that exceeds the charge that I would get by buying a fancy new car. But if you don't get started, then you only get the charge from the fancy new car. So starting young paves the path. The dollar amount does not matter. Okay. It was such an important point, and it's something that I harp on all the time. I wanted to just really back you up with how important I believe that is.
Well, and consider that in your retirement plan, that grows tax deferred.
Right.
So it's growing. There's no consequence for doing it. The one thing I caution most people on is make sure you have a cash cushion. You want to have something you can fall back on. I wouldn't want to see someone have credit card debt. You know, you need to work on your spending habits or something else. If you have 15-16% credit card debt, work on that first, except for the employer match. You got to take advantage of that.
Yep. Okay, buddy, let's move to two. I took way too much time.
No, it's all good. Those were great points and something everyone needs to consider. Point number two. Now, a lot of hospitals, this is a huge point that so many docs miss out on. If you are working for a hospital, more than likely, I see this time after time after time, you probably have more than one retirement plan. You probably have two.
Mm.
And I've seen this where a client has a 401k, they take advantage of that, and that's great. But then they also have a non-qualified 457 deferred compensation plan where you can tax deduct again another $17,500 or another $23,000. So between the two retirement plans, you know, you're talking $16,000 worth of tax savings today by doing that. So make sure to check out your retirement plan options. Also, if you're self-employed, there are so many different things we can do. SEP IRAs, defined benefit plans, all kinds of cool ways that you can get tax deductions. The third part that a lot of people don't do, which I really encourage them to do, is contribute to a health savings account, an HSA. And that's for a whole family, $6,500 that you can sock away there. And so here you are getting stuff you'd normally be paying for after tax, and you're putting in pre-tax dollars, and it comes out tax-free. This doesn't happen in the 401k. This doesn't happen in a traditional IRA. It doesn't happen in a Roth. You get the tax deduction, and it comes out tax-free. So you got to max that out, and in most cases, you can continue to accumulate and accumulate and accumulate so that when you do retire, you'll have this possibly huge account that you can draw on tax-free for health expenses.
Hey, Dave, do you know if you can invest that account, or is it just sit stagnant?
And it depends on the employer. It depends on the employer. In most cases, you invest it.
Interesting. Got it.
There are exceptions, but in most cases, you invest. And most companies have HSAs now because it allows them to have a high deductible medical plan. Mm-hmm. So it's something that's going to be more and more of a trend, and something more and more docs and anyone else really should take advantage of.
Yeah, we have one of those. I mean, my wife and I, we love it. You know, we anytime we go in for something, we feel brilliant because we get to pay with it for pre-tax dollars for any kind of medical piece. But I didn't think, you know, if you could take that and invest it in some sort of like tax-free municipal bond or something like that, where I could at least get a 4 or 5% rate of return or something like that. Anyway, so I'll look more into that. But
let me catch you on that.
Yeah.
Do not invest in a non-taxable account in a muni.
Oh.
That's a no-no. Don't do it.
Because it's already tax-free.
It's already tax-free.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
That makes total sense. Makes total sense.
All right. We've got to get going here. Part four. The next thing that I think a lot of docs need to look into, particularly young residents, there are some really cool moonlighting opportunities to set up your own business. So for example, if you go to freelancephysician.com, I know the guy who founded it, Dr. Jennings Staley, good guy. And there's opportunities all across the nation for moonlighting where you get that 1099 income and you're getting paid $150 an hour or more. And I know this is something our friend in common, Dr. James Dahl, does, although he doesn't do it, I don't think, through that website. But, you know, you can get great tax deductions and make money by doing something like that.
Mm. Great tip.
And then step five is all of the different business deductions that you can do. And consider that the business owner doesn't necessarily have to be you. It could be a spouse if you don't want to do the moonlighting, whether it's writing off a car that you're using for business, taking a home office deduction, expense travel related to the business, buying a computer, all of this stuff and more can be tax deductible. So it's something docs have to consider with as much money as they're making and this tax environment that's likely to be getting worse in the future.
I love it. We could spend hours there. We're going to move on. Thank you. Very good tips. And I think you've done a great job for our listeners thus far. We've already worked to reduce payroll taxes, and you've taught us to pay ourselves first. Killer lessons. Let's move on to chapter three. Would you briefly explain capital gains and how to manage them?
Yeah, you bet. So capital gains, essentially, you buy something and you sell it later. And if you made money on it, that's a capital gain. So it doesn't matter whether that's a stock or a house. Of course, we know there's various exemptions for some of these things. But nonetheless, if you buy an asset and it's not in a retirement account, you get capital gains. So over my career, I've worked with a bunch of corporate people, Microsofties, and some of these folks who they ended up buying that stock or getting an award where it was one third of the price that it is now. So it's a huge capital gain decision.
Right.
Alternatively, you could potentially have a capital loss, which it's getting to that time of the year. A lot of docs, particularly if you are in practice, need to think about either harvesting your gains or your losses. Mm. So let me explain that just for a second. Number one, you want to take a look at your tax return. All right. So all this stuff we're talking about, you got to review over your tax return. I have stuff in the book which will help you outline what you need to do, what you need to look at, which again you can get at doctorsachieveretirement.com for free. Or you can buy it on Amazon. Either way. But anyhow, what ends up happening as someone takes a look at their tax return, you want to say, do I have any carry forward losses? Sometimes people work with poor advisors or made a poor decision or whatever, where they have a whole bunch of capital losses. Again, some Microsofties I worked with, the opposite thing happened where they ended up getting a bunch of stock at the top of the tech boom, and Microsoft stock cratered after that. In one case, one gentleman I was working with had something like $200,000 of carry forward losses, because you can only write off $3,000 a year. Of course, the government doesn't have any cap on what you can do on the upside, but on the downside, they'll only let you write off $3,000 a year. So here this guy has $200,000 of losses. Every October, November, we would look at, okay, what are positions with gains that we can look to offset that loss with? Because we know at $3,000 a year, it's going to take them 66 years plus to write that off every single year. So we try to work on that. Alternatively, you could look at harvesting your losses, meaning that if you have some positions that are losers, you could look to sell them, because you have up to $3,000 a year that can offset your income taxes. Second big point that people need to be aware of is the difference in taxes between long-term and short-term gains. So you need to be very careful about this, because your long-term capital gains tax is extremely cheap. As a resident, it's practically nothing. You don't have to pay much of anything on your capital gains, depending upon your income. In most cases, it's very small. Now, once you are in practice, now you could be paying 20% plus when you think of the Affordable Care tax. So as a resident, make sure you're looking over if you inherited some stock from some parents. This is something we've worked on with a few residents where they were blessed with that kind of deal. You want to spread out that capital gain rather than thinking of trying to sell it all at some point down the road. If you really love the position, hey, you can always buy it back, right? You don't have to hold on to it forever. You can choose to be tax efficient with your money. And something in the book that people need to be aware of is how mutual funds can treat capital gains. There's things called phantom capital gains that people should probably read the book about to learn more.
So what is that time barrier between long-term and short-term capital gains? Is that holding the asset for 2 years or longer?
Great question. 1 year. Only 1 year.
Only 1 year. Got it. All right. So with the time we have left, can you give us a brief overview of charitable contributions? And really, Dave, any other common deduction strategies that our listeners should be employing to save on taxes that come to mind?
Yeah, absolutely. So charitable giving, if you own a home, in my opinion, and you're in a state that you're paying state income taxes in, or even if you don't, you may have the ability to itemize your taxes. And if you do, you need to be thinking about charity and charitable giving, in my opinion. Number one, hey, just give back. Do something good to help somebody out, you know? Do something to help back the community. And there's any number of ways you can do this, whether it's cash contributions or dropping off stuff to the Goodwill. My wife and I do that just to clean out our closet and clean out our house with kids. You know how that goes.
Yep.
You gotta
get rid of
clean it out every so often. So might as well get a donation for it, right? I mean, if you sell it on Craigslist, you're probably not going to get a whole lot of money for it. So might as well get a tax deduction for it. And overall, people just need to make sure they're keeping great records, contribute a cash or check. The other thing, which is huge, is you can also contribute property or an appreciated asset. So I can't overstate this enough. So if I look at the example at the top of my mind again, which is Microsoft stock. So if someone has, for example, Bill Gates, this is what he did. He established his own foundation. And then this Microsoft stock, where the basis might have been 50 cents and worth billions of dollars, he put a whole bunch of that into his own foundation, and it was all a tax write-off.
Wow.
All of it.
So now he got to sell it from inside of the foundation with no capital gain?
It's complicated, but just know it doesn't affect his personal taxes.
Got it.
So yes and no, but nonetheless, It gets you a tax write-off for your personal taxes. So it's a strategy that a lot of docs should be thinking about if they have appreciated assets. This is also something that older docs can do with required minimum distributions, which is an awesome strategy. And again, you got to read a little bit more on the book to get that, because I think we're probably getting close to running out of time. But it's something that a lot of people need to be aware of and think about whether or not it may apply to them.
Well, Dave, I appreciate your time, and we're right there. I always know it's been a great show when we're I feel like we snapped our fingers and here we are at the end of the show. But I want to give folks an opportunity to be able to find out more about you and of course get the workbook, but also find out more about the rest of the services that you offer, because what you've put together on taxes is really, really quite remarkable in that it's very simple, but very straight to the point and very effective. But you also have another workbook out. And if the folks want to find more about you and if you feel like it, please just tell us a little bit about the other workbooks that you have out and the services you offer, and then how do folks reach you?
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Josh. So I've written about five different workbooks. Three are physician specific. We talked about the taxes. When I have another one on debt. So if you're a resident or fellow or newly out of practice, I highly recommend that book. I talk about IBR versus PER, the public loan forgiveness program, as well as how do you decide which debt to pay off. So people definitely need to check that out, especially residents, fellows, and young physicians. Or if you're an older doc and you have a kiddo going into medical school, it's something that would be a great thing for them to learn. And I go into the same depth and the same meat we're talking about here. The second one was the insurance guide for physicians. So I talk all about life insurance and disability income and making sure that people can't get screwed over on having Cadillac policies and what to watch out for. And I give multiple examples because I always try and put myself in someone else's shoes in terms of what would I do if I were them. So those are all great resources. And then lastly, you and I were chatting before that I have a book coming out, which is going to compile all of these different things with even more material that's probably coming out maybe next year. So hopefully people might want to check that out and look for that as a resource. And people can always reach me if they want help with their individual situation. I'm always more than happy to meet with any resident or fellow for free. Existing docs can give you a discount on the normal services for being a listener here with Josh. You can reach me at dave@daviddeniston.com, daviddeniston.com, or give me a call toll free, 800-548-1820.
Dave, thanks again. We'll make sure and put those contact information right up on the podcast. And it was a pleasure connecting with you. And I just want to applaud you for the value that you are bringing to your clients. And beautiful story. And we look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Well, thanks so much, Josh. And I just want to say thank you to those physicians that are listening for what they do. You know, I just can't thank the great physicians that helped us out enough. And I think often so many docs are overworked and underappreciated for what they do. So thank you, Dr. Schwartz, what you do. And thank you, Josh, for making this available to them.
Oh, man. Well said. And you are very welcome. We'll connect soon.
All right. Thanks, Josh.